In 2015, Marie-Louise Sunde launched a gender discrimination campaign and wrote a book called Hashtag She's Got This, which created momentum for a not-so-discussed topic at the time, prior to Me Too. One thing led to another, and all of a sudden, she found herself being part of executive roundtable discussions regarding gender equality. Today, she is pioneering an undervalued industry in diversity and inclusion. Through Equality Check, the inspiring founder helps companies of all sizes around the world accelerate their D&I efforts through tangible data to help create more equal opportunities in the workplace. Welcome to the Funded by Plus Impact podcast. I'm your host, Rasmus, and today you can tune in to hear the CEO and co-founder of Equality Check, Marie-Louise Sunde, discuss a worrying development in gender equality projected by the World Economic Forum, and how she constructively tries to help companies accelerate diversity and inclusion through her impact startup. Remember to subscribe to our podcast, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to Funded by Plus Impact podcast. Today I'm joined by Marie-Louise Sunde, CEO and co-founder at Equality Check. Marie, thank you so much for wanting to join us today. It's such a pleasure and something that I've been really looking forward to. So please let us know about yourself and also what you're doing with Equality Check.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here. I'm a surgeon actually by profession. And I have a PhD within colorectal fields within surgery, and have been working as a surgeon for the past 5 years-ish until I quit my job 2 years ago to found Equality Check. And in addition to that work in the hospital, I've been always very, very passionate about gender equality and diversity and human rights. So I've been involved in a lot of work on the side internationally in those fields. And as a result of that, I was invited to the UN in 2014 when they launched their big He for She campaign, where Emma Watson gave a speech that has become very famous and gone down in the history books as the beginning of the fourth feminist wave.
Yeah.
Where she said a lot of things and finished with, if not now, when? If not me, then who? Which I was super inspired by. And at that time, even in Scandinavia, that was in 2014, gender equality was not really on the agenda. There was this notion or feeling that we had succeeded, we're done with gender equality, it's something that we have achieved. And at the same time, I felt very strongly, being a young woman in a very, very male-dominated field, which surgery is, that there was a lot of unconscious bias. So we've succeeded in the formal gender equality, but not at all in the informal gender equality. And so all these unconscious things, how we treat people differently without being aware, etc., that was very, very obvious for me. So I wanted to do a campaign to address that and raise awareness on that, which we did, which was very successful. And through that work, started to gather a lot of information, a lot of data, a lot of experience, seeing that the good thing is that the society wants to become more diverse. Diversity and inclusion is very much on the agenda now. And especially, I think maybe last year with Black Lives Matters, it's been broadened also to cover not only gender, but ethnicity and other diversity parameters. But the problem is that, and this was also very obvious for me coming from more of a scientific point of view, is that when it comes to diversity and inclusion, there's a total lack of data-driven approach. There's a total lack of evidence-based approach, which results in very poor results. So although diversity and inclusion has been on the agenda for a while, we're not really seeing results. And so that's the where we had the idea to found Equality Check, which is a company that solves those problems. So it's a company that it's an open platform where all employees can leave a review about their workplace, and also on those things that we know employees care the most about today, which are equal opportunities, future potential, work-life balance, inclusive culture, etc., unconscious bias. And then we cover the broad diversity spectrum. So when 5 people have reviewed their workplace, it goes live. It's like a TripAdvisor for equality in the workplace. Yeah. Or the workplace in general. And then we start gathering a lot of data. And so for people, they can go in there and research, like you research a restaurant, you can research your job or workplace or other workplaces. Mm-hmm. And then we gather a lot of data that we can use to help companies improve when it comes to diversity and inclusion.
Super exciting. So if you had to say it in a concrete way, how can Equality Check then effectively come in and help close this economic gender gap with its platform?
So it's through transparency. That's super important. Through data generated by employees, covering the important data sets that are missing right now. And then we can transform that data into insight for companies so that they can know, sort of, it's like a, to use medical terms, like a diagnostic tool, to know what the problems are. And then we have strong collaboration with research communities so that when we have diagnosed the problems, we can tell companies what measures they should be implementing that are actually evidence-based measures. So it's through transparency, data, insight, and evidence-based approach to improve.
That's really, really interesting as well. And I want to get back to that. But first off, I actually also wanted to kind of touch upon your personal experience, because you've experienced both unconscious and conscious bias and even sexual harassment working as a surgeon previously in Norway. So with all your work back in 2015, you launched a gender discrimination campaign on social media. You also wrote a book called Hashtag She's Got This, that's in English, of course, which was a huge success and created a momentum for a not so discussed topic at the time prior to the whole Me Too. So one thing led to another, and all of a sudden you're kind of finding yourself a part of these executive roundtable discussions regarding gender equality. So what I was wanting to ask you is if this was the moment when you knew that you had to create Equality Check and that there actually was a need for it?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was like a gradual journey on that in identifying the acute needs of more data and a more evidence-based approach, and also the starting with the, like you say, the awareness building, because what was very prevalent, I think, back in 2014, 2015 for me working with this was that we do have a lot of unconscious biases. And at that time, we were working mostly with unconscious biases towards with regards to gender. And so there's a lot of studies showing that we don't view people the same way. And that's, I think, shocking for Scandinavians to actually take in, because as Scandinavians, we are very, we value equality. We think that we're very equal. Everyone has the same, should have the same rights, etc. And we don't want to accept sort of that we do actually value people or view people differently. And so we started, what we wanted to do with the campaign initially was to show the extent of that, because what usually happens is that each episode is seen as an individual episode. Mm-hmm. And when it's seen as such, it's so easy to minimize or normalize or rationalize or say it's just a joke, or it's just they were just trying to be nice, or that's not what they meant, etc. And then you don't see the pattern. But then when you start looking at the larger numbers, you you see the pattern, it's quite devastating how we do view people differently. So there's, for example, a study that we often use here in Norway, which is a study that was done in 2015. It's a replication of a Harvard study that was done back in 2000. And so it's a study where about 100 students get to read a text about a leader, a top leader, a bit about where they've been studying, previous work experience, and then now the current job as a CEO of a large international technology company, and a bit about the family situation. Mm-hmm. And then the students are asked to rate this person afterwards. But what they don't know is that half of them are reading about a top leader called Hans, and the other half are reading about the top leader called Hannah. But except from that, the text is identical. And then it turns out that the students reviewed those people very differently. So those who read about Hans said that he was a great leader. They really liked him. They wanted him as a mentor. They wanted to have a beer with him after work. He was not bossy. He was a great parent. And those who read about Hannah didn't like her that much. They didn't think she was a good leader. They didn't want her as a mentor. They didn't want to have a beer with her after work. She was definitely seen as bossy, and she was seen as not such a good parent. And so that shows how we view people. So a man and a woman can do the same thing, and it's perceived very differently because we have all these unconscious biases and stereotypes, mm-hmm. and that the accumulated effect of that is quite severe in the society, even in and also as much in Scandinavia as in any other country in the world. And so that's what was very easy for me to identify, being a young woman in a male dominated field. So yeah. As you say, I've experienced a lot from patient colleagues, nurses, who I was, for example, often, and many of them are very small episodes, like being taken for a nurse, or experiencing that my male colleagues are listened to a greater extent than I am, etc. Also, like you say, a lot of sexual harassment. Some of them, those episodes, also very easy to minimize, because it's just a comment, or it's just a joke, or it's just a funny situation, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
But then the accumulated effect is quite severe.
It definitely is, and it's shocking that you kind of had to set up these scenarios, because I heard about another study that was basically made in the same kind of way, but it was within VCs, so actually investors, where they would hear a pitch, the exact same pitch from a male and a female founder, or a male and a female voice. And it was like 70% that would choose to invest in the male voice and not choose to invest in the female voice.
Even though
it was exactly the same pitch.
Yeah. And that study is the one that was done by MIT, I think, the one you're referring to.
Yeah.
And it was 70% almost that wanted to invest when it was a male voiceover. And I think 34% who wanted to invest when it was a female voiceover. So it's the differences are staggering, but then still we make up all these excuses. Mm-hmm. So what we do say today is that, well, women, we don't have that many female founders because women are not as risk taking as men. Yeah. Women choose differently. Women value family more than men do, etc. And we rationalize the observations that we see. But then it turns out that maybe the explanation is completely different.
Yeah.
In very many of these cases, we are severely misunderstanding the correlation between cause and effect. We observe a trend, like, for example, the trend that there are fewer female founders than male founders, and then we make up an explanation that fits with the stereotypes that we do have in our society, for example, that women prioritize family or don't take risks the same extent as men do. But then we also know that founding a company is extremely it takes a lot of money. You have to fundraise a lot of money.
Definitely.
And when 2% or what it is of the VC money goes to women, it's quite obvious that that's a big reason for why we don't have that many female-led companies.
I believe that as well. And I also read that the World Economic Forum announced that at the current rate of progress, women around the world will have to wait around at least over 200 years before we can achieve gender equality in the workplace. And that is so frightening to kind of hear, and disturbing. So all of this combined together, how have companies greeted your tool so far? Are they still reluctant to know what is underneath? Are they curious to create a change? Do they want to make a change? Because if we look at the numbers, change is not really happening. We're talking about it, but it's not happening. So in your experience, how are the companies you're working with treating your product?
I think it's been interesting. We saw a huge change from 2015 to 2017.
Yeah.
In 2015, diversity and inclusion was not on the agenda. From 2017, we really saw that it was starting to become on the agenda. And we started to see that companies really understood the commercial interest in diversity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And we started to see reports showing that diversity and inclusion is also improving profit and the bottom line, etc. And since 2017 and until last year, we saw that there was, like you say, a lot of interest in it. It was being set higher on the agenda, but there was mainly talk and very little action. And that talk is the good thing about the talk is that it puts it on the agenda. The bad thing is that it masks the development, because many people today think that, well, equality is so high, we talk so much about it, it's so high on the agenda. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is something that we are solving. But like you say, when you look at the results, very little is done, actually.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about the study that you have seen from World Economic Forum is that what they've shown is that up until 2016, diversity and inclusion was going in the right direction. So the gender gap was close, slowly being closed. And that trend changed in 2016. So 2016 is the first time in the history of World Economic Forum's reports where they say that it's actually slowing down. It's actually going backwards. It's going to take longer and longer and longer time to reach economic parity. So, and then we saw another big change last year in 2020, where we had the Black Lives Matter movements, and most companies are seeing that diversity is more than gender. Ethnicity has come very high on the agenda. LGBTQI is on the agenda, not as high as ethnicity, but the whole diversity spectrum is broadening. Yeah. And we do feel that last year was sort of the year that diversity inclusion went from a CSR buzzword to becoming a business imperative, and companies really understanding that now they have to stop talking and they have to actually prove change. And one of the important reasons for that is the stakeholder demand that is increasing. We have the movements like Black Lives Matter and Me Too. There's a lot of like legislations coming on now from different governments demanding diversity and inclusion reporting. And maybe the most important stakeholder being employees. Yeah. Because employees today have different, and millennials especially, have different demands for their workplace. Mm-hmm. They want equal opportunity, they want diversity, they want a future potential, etc. And they're sooner to quit. And now millennials are taking over the workplace. So we can, as employees, we can be super important stakeholders in making that change. So back to your question, we do feel that there's a huge interest now from companies. And the desperate need for actual results, and also that they are being quite open to understanding that they need to be transparent, they need to have data, they need to be evidence-driven in their approach, and a maturing startup of the market in understanding the urgency and how to do that.
Definitely. Well, one thing I was also curious about, because now you say that, okay, there's definitely an interest, there's a need for this to happen right away. But when you launched back in 2018, we were still discussing this. We were still in a period where we were actually declining in gender equality. So when I first saw, looked at your platform and your product, I kind of reminisced to Glassdoor, which is actually notoriously known for its bad reputation among employers. So I was wondering if it was challenging in the beginning to make sure that employers actually embrace equality check.
So we're it's very natural to compare us to Glassdoor, but we feel that we're closer to Trustpilot, for example, in our approach and our relation to our business model and our relation to both the end users and the paying clients. So where the some big differences between us and Glassdoor is that we are yes, we're an open platform where employees can leave a review, and it's super important for us that they are anonymous. Mm-hmm. We never reveal data in a way that can compromise any individual, and also that the content there is true. So as a company, you cannot, like with Glassdoor, for example, as a company, you can pay to hide information, or you can pay to
exactly
do a bit of makeup on your profile. Yeah. With us, you can't do that. You can't pay to hide the data. It's we think it's super important that it's true and that it's transparent. Mm-hmm. But what we do, what we also are super care a lot about is that we want to help companies improve. So where Glassdoor is a pure B2C company, what we do is that we are sort of business model is B2B, like Trustpilot. So we help companies with data, we help them diagnose, we help them improve. So if a problem is exposed on our platform, we can help them, we can help them improve. And having problems exposed is not a problem, like we see it, because no one are experts in the field. No one are best in class today when it comes to diversity inclusion. Mm-hmm. So being transparent about the situation is not really a problem.
No.
What is a problem is if you start hiding it, or if you have absolutely no intention of improving. So we do actually, when we launched in 2018, some companies were a bit hesitant about the transparency.
Yeah,
what imagine. We see now. Yeah, but what we see now is that companies are really understanding, the world is becoming more and more transparent. We review everything. Mm-hmm. And so companies are more and more used to the whole transparency trend, and they're really seeing the value of that because employees value it so much. If you want to be a company that attracts the best talent, you have to be transparent about the culture and what's like working there. And then rather using that to improve. So that's important for us to have a very good relation with companies and to being able to help them to improve. And we have a very positive approach in that we, on our sites, we promote those that are doing well. We have a top 10 list of a lot of different things. We mm-hmm. don't have bottom 10 lists.
No.
but you would be able to go in and see there if you dig deep into the data, but also that we are that we have integrity in the data. So you can't pay your way out of transparency, but you can pay your way into improving the culture and becoming a workplace that that attracts the best talents and where employees are really happy.
It's amazing to see that you've actually chosen a constructive approach to help onboard the companies on this matter, because it is help they need, and that's what you facilitate. So super inspiring to hear about it. But talking about gender bias, so as you also touched upon, in 2020, Crunchbase released the numbers that 2.3% of global VC funding went to women-led startups, so not a lot. So I wanted to kind of get to know your funding journey, how you've experienced your funding journey so far, and how much have you raised so far?
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. We've raised so far 5 million Norwegian kroners, and then we're now fundraising 10 million Norwegian kroners, so 1 million euros.
Yeah.
And it's been and the thing about unconscious bias is that it's, if you break it down to individual episodes, which mm-hmm. is what you experience as a person, it's so hard to say if it's unconscious bias or not. I've never pitched as a white straight man, so I don't know how it would have been perceived.
No.
But like you say, what we do know from female founders is that 2% goes into VC funding, and why is that? And there's a study actually from Sweden, in addition to the one you mentioned, that also proves that looking at government venture funding in Sweden, mm-hmm. A lot more is given to men, and men are often considered as more appropriate founders. Mm-hmm. And then when they went back and valued the different projects, they saw that there wasn't a different how well the pitches were, how well the startups were. So I think one, and we also know from investors that investors are, when they look at female founders, they more often are afraid, or they want to protect the downsides. So they ask more questions about risk and how to avert it, and what is the potential downside in this startup? Yeah. Whereas so as a female founder, you're very easily put into the defensive position. Mm-hmm. Whereas with male founders, the investors are a lot more interested in asking a lot more about the potential upsides. So as a founder, you put more in the offensive position.
Yeah.
So that's one problem. And the other problem being, like you described with the MIT study, that you actually see female founders as less competent, less likely to succeed. Mm-hmm. And you unconsciously think that a woman's project is less viable as a company. And then maybe the third problem also being that most of the VCs today are led by white straight men.
Yeah.
And they associate with problems. It's easier for them to understand problems that they feel themselves, mm-hmm. Or have seen or identify themselves. Whereas as a founder, what you usually do is you identify a problem and then you make a solution to fix that problem. And women and other minority founders, they are likely to identify some other problems than white straight men identify. And those problems might not seem so real for the investors because they don't experience it.
No.
So it's harder for them also to see the business potential there. So if you look at the numbers or the pattern or the trend, it's very mm-hmm. likely that we are experiencing unconscious bias from the investors. But then again, it's very hard when you, as a founder and when you pitch, most of the pitches will be rejected. That's the nature of pitching. And it's very hard for each situation to say, is this because I'm bad? Is this because our project is poor? Is this not viable? Or is this our men being rejected as much as we are? Is the valuation, would the valuation be accepted if it was a male founder, etc.? Each individual episode is so hard to identify as unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so hard. But looking at the pattern and the research, it's very likely that we are.
Yeah. Well, your whole business model around gender equality within impact, do you think this is a space that is still undervalued by investors?
Yeah, I think we are in, when it comes to the diversity and inclusion, I think we are where climate and sustainability was in 2015.
Yeah.
It had been on the agenda for a while. There was a lot of talk about it. But the companies or the business world or the investors wasn't really ready to start seeing that this is going to be a huge business potential. And then 5 years later, we know that it is a huge mm-hmm. business potential. And there's a lot happening there. So we think that we are first movers within diversity and inclusion and sort of creating that market, which is going to be a huge, huge, huge market within the next few years.
I think so as well. And especially also with all the turbulence that we had with the Black Lives Matter as well, I think equality in general as a whole space of impact is growing now and something that we really have to attend to as well. And it's positive to see that you kind of are finding your own success and can help inspire other startups as well. So if you could give any advice, because I was still thinking about this number from the World Economic Forum regarding the disturbing 200 years until we can find ourselves in a more equal society. Until then, what do you think is required to make this inequality change?
I think so. The numbers from World Economic Forum is on the premise that we don't make any changes. We do exactly what we do now. Mm-hmm. And if we continue like this, it's going to be 202 years or whatever until we reach parity, economic parity.
Yeah.
So what we have to do is we have to do something different mm-hmm. to catalyze and speed up that change. And I think the most important thing there is transparency and data and a data-driven approach. And so what, as a regular employee or a regular person, what you can do there is to contribute with transparency and data, to be aware of your stakeholder position.
Yeah.
And that's the that's why it's been important for us to create Equality Check as a B2C platform, mm-hmm. Where it's super easy for employees to give data, to give their reviews, to contribute with transparency and to help drive that change, because we know that big change has never come from the corporate world. Big change comes from the people, and then the corporate world follows on. So of course, leave a review and a quality check, contribute with data and transparency, and be aware of our stakeholder position when we do stand together.
Some great advice. I also wanted maybe to challenge you a bit here. So talking about that, equality is still a space where we need more attention to. If you could give a tip or a hint to maybe a business that we need within gender equality, what could that be if an aspiring founder is sitting out there?
Well, it's so much, because the beauty of this field is that it's in the making. Those of us who are within diversity and inclusion now is really pioneering within the field. So mm-hmm. I think there's a huge amount of different kinds of business potential within there. So what we're seeing a lot of startups starting to do now, which I think is very interesting, is making tools to help with all the different aspects, like the recruiting process, or how do you make unconscious or how do you remove unconscious bias from job descriptions, how do you make recruiting less biased, etc. So there's a lot of aspects, so there's a lot of processes that can be optimized within the whole workplace region, mm-hmm. To remove bias and to make sure that we are being treated equally. So it's I think there's the sky's the limit there. There is no limit to what kinds of things that you could be doing.
Definitely. A last thing I wanted to ask you before we finish up for today is that do you have any advice on, or do you know if it's possible as a female to kind of counter bias when pitching your fundraising ideas? I know you said that you don't really know the scenario because you've never done it as a male before. But is there any way where you know that you can come in and showcase your competencies?
Yeah, so I think it's two ways to work around this. And what I'm also really, I think is very important is that, because what happens in these situations is we tend to go to the women or to the minority founders and say, you have to overcome this, you have to pitch differently to improve. I do think actually that it's a systemic problem. So I think that the investors have to overcome this. The investors have to realize the kind of biases they have and the business potential that they are missing out on. So most importantly, I think we should be working with the investors. And then, of course, being a female or minority founder today, you have to be the first, and you have to sort of break that glass ceiling. And that makes it a lot harder, because being a founder in general is hard, and then having to educate the investors at the same time means that you have it's a double burden. So I am really aware that we shouldn't adding on burdens to women or minority founders and sort of putting that this on them. But then my advice in that case would be just to be aware that you will be perceived differently, quite likely. There will be unconscious bias among many of the investors. Don't take that kind of negative feedback personally. It's not necessarily because you suck or your startup suck. It's a systemic bias there that you're just going to have to meet. And then what you can do also, which is a lot harder, but to be prepared that you will get more defensive or negative questions, and how to turn that into instead of talking about the downside, flipping it to talk about the potential upside, or identifying when those things happen and try to turn it and try to create the narrative yourself. So that's something that you could do. Obviously it's a lot harder, so it takes a lot more from the female founders and the minority founders. And then I think also it's important to that investors start working with these biases and start changing them.
And that's maybe the most important message of them all, because we have to address this systemic issue. Marie, thank you so much for coming on today. Thank you for your positive messages, your great takeaways, and of course also your mission with Equality Check. I think you're doing a great job, and I can't wait to follow your journey as well. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.